You are listening to a podcast produced by the Jackson School of International Studies and the Ellison Center for Russian, East European, and Central Asian Studies at the University of Washington. This and other podcasts can be found on iTunes and SoundCloud. For more information, visit us at jsis.washington.edu/Ellison Center.
Hello, and welcome to today's webinar. I'm Scott Radnitz, the director of the Ellison Center for Russian, East European, and Central Asian Studies at the University of Washington. And today's topic is Central Asia in the Shadow of Russia's War. Russia's invasion of Ukraine caused a major shock that affected the entire region. The focus of media and expert commentary has rightly been mostly on Ukraine, but we've seen broader geopolitical consequences. Among others, NATO has been revived. Russia is increasingly isolated from the West and more dependent on China. Russia is seeking now more support in the global South and redirecting its economy away from Europe and toward Asia. The Central Asian states have been impacted by these developments, but often get overlooked. They are mostly ambivalent toward Russia and trying to avoid isolation from the West by their association with Russia. They are not a playing field for the great powers to fight in, but actors in their own right. Their leaders are skilled at thriving amid challenges, but their citizens don't always go along. Concretely, the war has had a deep impact on Central Asia, both short-term and long-term. They are affected by their close linkages to the Russian economy. Some states are acting as transit routes to evade Western sanctions. Central Asian migrants in Russia have been press-ganged to fight in Ukraine. I should note that currently British Foreign Secretary David Cameron is on a trip to all five capitals, so that indicates that Central Asia is still viewed as strategically important by some, but he's just passing through. So 2 years into this war, I wanted to get a status update of the Central Asian states and their citizens in their own terms. So I came up with a few questions to structure this conversation. I'm interested in understanding from the perspective of our expert commentators, how ordinary citizens view the war. How has the war affected internal political dynamics in the Central Asian states? What are the prospects for future Russian influence in the region? And what's missing from the broader public discourse about Central Asia, things that have been overlooked while our attention has been focused elsewhere? So I invited two experts to try to address these questions. The first is Nargis Kaseneva. She's a senior fellow and director of the program on Central Asia at the Davis Center at Harvard. Her research focuses on Central Asian politics and security, Eurasian geopolitics, China's Belt and Road Initiative, governance in Central Asia, and the history of state-making in Central Asia. Our other guest is Timur Umarov. He's a fellow at the Carnegie Russia-Eurasia Center, and his research is focused on Central Asian countries' domestic and foreign policies, as well as China's relations with Russia and Central Asian neighbors. So I asked them to speak for 15 to 20 minutes to address some of the questions that I posed earlier. You, the audience, are free to submit questions by clicking on Q&A and typing them into the box. And I'll be collecting these questions throughout, and I'll present them to the panelists after they speak. So now we will hear from Nargis Kaseneva.
Thank you very much, Scott. It is a great pleasure and honor to be hosted by you, by the Ellison Center, and to be on the panel with Timur. It's our Timur. I don't know, 10th panel together since the beginning of the war, probably. Let's look at the big picture first, and at the kind of the stance of Central Asian states on the war and what's on these developments triggered by the war, and there are both commonalities and differences, yeah, in the stances and approaches. And first, I want to kind of mention that the common feature is that none of Central Asian states is endorsing the war, and none of them likes it because clearly now we have Russia, the kind of the powerhouse in the region, the kind of central feature of the post-Soviet security and political order, feel itself, less constrained, clearly, violating borders and denying the sovereignty of a post-Soviet state. And we hear these very worrying discourses inside Russia, politicians say strange things, public opinion makers also say things that are really not appreciated in the region. But there are also differences in what the government say and what they don't say, how they vote in the UN General Assembly, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we know that, among the five, Kazakhstan has been the most outspoken. It also has been the most diligent in implementing the crackdown on sanction evasion, and it is not surprising. It is not surprising given Kazakhstan's situation, given the shared border with Russia, given the similarities with Ukraine. We have northern eastern regions that are seen by some in Russia as a part of the historical Russia. And there is still a considerable ethnic Russian population, Russian-speaking population, the cultural presence, the media presence of Russia is very considerable. So there is a fear that what happened to Ukraine might in some form happen to Kazakhstan. And Uzbekistan is close in its positioning, and the others are kind of more quiet. Let's put it this way. But I think the kind of if we try to explain this difference, what comes to my mind is that the size matters. The bigger states, they kind of feel the need to kind of show their position and to play a role in the international system. So there is some sort of noblesse oblige in this regard. And the second factor is the level of, if I use the kind of popular term, the level of connectivity with the West, with Europe, with the United States. And here, of course, Kazakhstan has the strongest links to the West, to Europe. European Union accounts for 40% of Kazakhstan's trade, and there are major Western investments in Kazakhstan. So for these ties to the West are vital. They're of crucial importance for Kazakhstan. Also, the third factor would be different sets of vulnerabilities and dependencies that each of us, each of the five Central Asian states, has vis-a-vis Russia. And here, the issue of labor migrants is important. And basically, if Russia wants to harm Central Asian states, it can do it. All five have vulnerabilities, but with smaller Central Asian countries, it's easier to exercise this leverage. I would say, you asked about the how the ordinary citizens react to the situation, what their attitudes are, and we do see a considerable change. Well, I will focus on Kazakhstan since we have Timur here, who will talk about Uzbekistan, and maybe we can make some references about the situation in other countries. But definitely, the level of support of Russia is down, and the level of disapproval is up. And here, I would like to refer to the Gallup numbers, and the Gallup poll registered a dramatic rise in the disapproval of Russian leadership from 20% in 2021 to 50% in 2022. And what's interesting is that the level of disapproval among the Russian ethnic Russian population is also up, less dramatically, but it is going up as well. And of course, all of us Central Asia experts follow Central Asia Barometer output, and they conduct regular polls in Central Asia, and they also register considerable decrease in the approval of Russia, and of course consequently degree of disapproval of Russia. So let me just compare. So for example, in Kazakhstan in 2017, 52% of respondents had very favorable view of Russia, and it fell to 13% in 2022, and last year it stood at 17%. So something big is happening. If we look at the public opinion as well, and that gives a boost to the processes of kind of national consciousness rise in Kazakhstan and and other countries of the region as well. Now, maybe I'll stop here. I really want us to go and discuss the geopolitical context, because that's my main area. But maybe first we can go to Timur.
Thank you very much. Again, huge honor and a great pleasure to be here with Nargis. I love to be on a panel with Nargis because I would say agree on most of the things, but we still have this space where we disagree, and we can always have fun by having a little debate, especially about China's role in the region. But I think we will come to it a bit further in the panel. Yes, one of the biggest questions that arises with the war in Ukraine is how people in Central Asia now perceive Russia. Because for decades, even considering all of the horrors that Central Asian migrants would go through in Russia, even considering what Russian MFA or officials or public figures would allow themselves to say about different Central Asian nations, even consider all that, Russia's soft power presence in the region was pretty stable and wasn't, going anywhere. And I think that with the war in Ukraine, we are living in the times of structural change in the way people see Russia, in the way people think about Russia, especially when we speak about younger generation of Central Asians who were born already in the independent states and who do not have this nostalgic ties to the USSR and know about USSR from the books or from the stories shared at home. So I think that and surveys are also showing it. Every time Russia is doing something crazy, it automatically has a big effect on how people see Russia in Central Asia. And of course, the unprecedented start of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022 was a huge event that changed the perception. Nargis has already talked about the Gallup survey result that showed that, you know, for the first time in some of the Central Asian and broadly post-Soviet, actually, there were also South Caucasus countries included in this survey, shown that the level of disapproval of Russia's actions are higher than approval. This is being observed for the first time in some of the countries. But I should say that here we also should keep in mind that the perception of Russia in different Central Asian countries is different. And the further you go from the Russian border, the less stressed and nervous people get about Russia. And that is why Kazakhstan is an exception when we speak about the perception of Russia. Because even already in Uzbekistan, that doesn't share a border with Russia, that doesn't has this level of attention from the Russian decision makers and Russian public figures, even in Uzbekistan, you feel that people are more relaxed about Russia's potential threat from Russia, and that Russia can be this country that creates problems. It's just, you know, the feeling that you get talking to people who work for the government, who do business, etc. And it is also something that we observe in the surveys. However, for example, if we speak about the surveys like the Central Asian barometers, we should understand that it's more challenging to conduct surveys in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan than in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan. And that is why even Central Asian Barometer doesn't have the latest data on Uzbekistan, for example, when it comes to the war in Ukraine. And their questioning, the phrasing of their questions is different for Uzbekistan. For example, if in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, they ask, what do you think about the war in Ukraine? And who do you think is responsible for it? In Uzbekistan, they ask, do you follow international news? Are you nervous about what is going on in the region? So because of that, we can just kind of have a broad opinion about what's going on with the society and how they view the current situation. But even without the statistics, I can say that people follow the war in Ukraine with less attention in Uzbekistan than in Kazakhstan. In Uzbekistan, there is a perception that is that this war is happening somewhere far away and doesn't really affect their lives. There is only one exception in this whole changing atmosphere is the economic situation. When it comes to the economic situation, when it comes to the question about the consequences of the war in Ukraine, the first thing that people in Uzbekistan say is the economic consequences for their lives. It's visible on the economic data. The inflation has gone up. The prices of the products for basic necessities has gone up. The prices for heating, electricity, everything has gone up for Uzbekistan in the last 2 years. And people tie this to the war in Ukraine. And especially in September 2022, when there was the unprecedented inflow of migrants from Russia to Uzbekistan for the first time in the history of independent Uzbekistan, it also was seen rather as a crisis than an opportunity, because people had to adapt to the growing prices in the housing market and etc. So This is one. But again, when we speak about authoritarian political regimes in Central Asia, we should understand that the perception of the society doesn't really affect the decision making in the country. Of course, in, you know, right now, the society's pressure on the government is much higher than it was ever before. We've never seen such a such a government that would be so much afraid of what people will think, what people will say on social media, whether or not this or that decision will be something that will undermine their stability, etc. But even in this situation, the society still has little to say when it comes to the final decision making in Central Asian political regimes, and that is why the perception of the war in Ukraine is different for the society and for the people who make decisions, for the political elites. They look at these things differently. In my view, they're much more cynical, much more pragmatic, and they understand that, you know, on the one hand, they have to adapt politically to the situation. They cannot, you know, cut their ties and alienate themselves from Russia. It will be a suicide move. On the other hand, they understand that there are opportunities that they can use. And this is something that we also see. For example, Kyrgyzstan's re-export numbers are you know, very high. Even if you look at the official data of Kyrgyzstan's trade, and you will compare it to, like, if you will mirror the statistics to other countries' statistics, you will also see that it's just obvious that re-export is happening through Central Asian countries. And there were a couple of independent journalist investigations in these directions, which show that Central Asian business and political elites are not sitting and waiting to see what's gonna happen to, you know, the war in Ukraine or with sanctions, etc. They are acting and having a pragmatic approach to gain as much you know, bonuses from the situation that they're in as possible, considering that the amount of you know, problems that they're dealing with right now is also on the rise. And one of the problems that the war in Ukraine broadly has brought to the table to decision makers in Central Asia is, of course, the situation with migration. And here, I think that the recent attack on the Krakow City Hall, one of the biggest terrorist attacks in Russia for the last two decades, has also, you know, added to this problem of what's going to happen to the trends in migration between Central Asia and Russia. For years, Central Asian countries, especially Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan, have been relying on Russia as the main kind of place to work for millions of migrants in different years. Around 5-7 million Central Asians have been annually visiting Russia for working purposes. And this is something that is very important for the stability of political regimes of these three countries, not only from the economic point of view, but also from political point of view. It's understandable. No, you know, those authoritarian states do not want to have people males in inside of their countries without a job, fairly young people who have energy to put pressure on their governments if they are dissatisfied or if they are in a situation where they cannot feed their families, right? That is why it is in their interest to make everything possible so the migration is working. And for now, the easiest way for Central Asian people to migrate is to go to Russia because of the the routes that exist there, the networks, the amount of businesses who help you with migration, amount of relatives, friends, and just other neighbors and stuff like that who have already been there and know where to find jobs and know what kind of documents you need to have with yourself so that you will not face problems in Russia. So it is a very, very understandable, very easy to navigate country for Central Asian migrants. And that is why even with the war in Ukraine, even with the fluctuations in Russian currency, even with the problems that they have with the Russian security agencies, people still continue coming to Russia because for some it's the last resort. Just take a look at the official statistics of, for example, Tajikistan, and you will see how necessary it is for people to go to Russia to get a job because the unemployment is high. Official numbers will not show you the real situation with the employment market, but unofficial data is there. The level of poverty, even by the official scope, is 26%. And if you take a look at how people spend their remittances that they get from Russia, you will see that 80% of those remittances are being spent immediately for the products of basic necessities, which means that the question of migration is a question of survival. It's not a question of savings. It's not a question of collecting more resources. It's just the question of whether or not your kids will be eating something proper next week or not. So that is why people will continue to go to Russia, even right now with the consequences of the terror attack and a high level of xenophobia that we're seeing. And even considering that Russian security agencies are on high alert and trying to get rid of the responsibility that is putting that many people put on them for not being prepared for the terror attack, and they want to make migrant communities responsible, and that is why this is their their reaction to the terror attack. But people still from Central Asia are desperate, and I don't see any other opportunities and alternatives for them. There are, of course, alternatives to go to and migrate to European countries or other parts of the world like Japan, South Korea, but it is much more difficult. Japan, South Korea are further away. It's costly. You have to find programs where you will go through through education process before you start working. It's much more difficult. From my hometown, from Samarkand, around 30,000 people were previously working in Israel. Right now, Israel is also not stable, and people are afraid that considering what's happening for the last months in the Middle East, people are also considering that option not to be available. Turkey's economy is not doing well. Inflation is skyrocketing, and it's also not a very stable part of not very stable economy, and also considering that after the Krokus City Hall attack, Turkey stopped the visa-free agreement with Tajikistan, it's also going to be more difficult for some of the people from Central Asia. Europe was always difficult. So considering all that, I think that the migration trends that have been there before the terror attack and before the war will still be the core of migration. However, what is changing is the long-term migration. Those people who saw Russia as a destination for their future, for the future for their kids, this part is shrinking. But the seasonal migration, those people who go to Russia and come back home, go to Russia for less than 9 months, these people are still and will continue be going to Russia. I think that was my 20 minutes. I can also speak about other questions, but we can go to Q&A now, I guess.